Stay tuned for Occupied Territory America, hosted by Mike Fader. And this is Occupied Territory America on WPRN. So did I say, I'm so used to old-fashioned radio. To say W, right, because I used to be on regular radio stations. PRN.FM. It's the modern world. Wake up, Mike. And we're on every Tuesday. Every Tuesday, every Thursday. No, I'm not drinking. I'm preoccupied. The world is too much with me. There's a poem. One of the lines in it, the world is too much with me. Maybe it's too much news. Is it possible to be inundated by too much news? I think it is. I do two news shows and I write a political blog. Anyhow, Occupied Territory America is here every Thursday at 2 p.m. And I'm Mike Fader, your host. First thing, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but I have a new book out. I have a brand new book that has just been published. It's on Amazon and all over other platforms. You can also order a paperback copy of it. And if you want to find out more about it and how to get it, go to my website. It's FederFiles, FederFiles.com, FederFiles.com. And you can find out all about it. You can also go to Amazon and read a free first portion of it to see if you like it. So speaking of being like overwhelmed by the news, I really do need to take a vacation. I've been doing political programming without really having an actual vacation for maybe years. I guess it'd just be overwhelming. And I think one of the problems is too, and everybody who's listening to me now, I'm sure, could understand this. You try and you try and you try. You can't give up, but you try and you try and you try. And it seems as if you're going backwards. It's like you're walking forward as fast as you can on one of those airplanes. One of those things. I haven't been in an airport for a long time, but they have those, electronic walkways, you know, where you just get on it and you just move along. It's like you're trying to walk forward, but you're on one and you're going in the wrong direction, but it's going in the wrong direction. Like you're walking forward. But the thing is going faster and stronger the other direction. And as much as you keep walking forward, and even if you increase your pace, you keep going backwards. This is the way the political situation and the entire whole country feels right now. I mean, a lot of people like me and a lot of people like who are listening, people who hear this, who replay this on other radio stations, activists, people I have here as guests, they try and try and try. They spend part of their life, all of their life, dedicated to trying to repair the damage, to change things, to create real equality or real democracy. And you just keep feeling like you're slipping backwards. You're slipping backwards. You're slipping backwards. Sometimes there's the occasional ray of hope. But, you know, by now we're used to hearing all kinds of proclamations and statements from our quote-unquote leaders or politicians. And I can't imagine that anybody under the age of, over the age, let's say, of 12, over the age of 12, believes one single word, a syllable, one letter that comes out of the mouth or that is written by any kind of politician. And this is not a new thing in the world, but they're lying and exaggerating and just outright lies are so relentless and overwhelming. It's been going on for so long and that nobody pays any attention to them anymore. There was a big article, big headline today in the New York Times, which says Obama to restrict drone programming, to close Guantanamo and restricts drone programming and to restrict drone. He's going to make a speech in 2 days. And that's what the Times doesn't say. By this point, he's such a liar in so many ways that it's hard to even add it up anymore. I mean, I don't believe that even when he says hello, that he actually is telling the truth anymore, this guy. And this goes for all of them. But, you know, he's the president, so he's the one you pick out the most often. But here's the big headline in the Times. He's going to make a speech at the National Defense, whatever it is. The people are graduating from the National Defense College, whatever the hell that is. You don't even want to know what that is, right? So he's going to speak to the graduates of this place. You don't even want to know who these people are and what they do. And he's going to tell them in a major policy speech, which he leaked, by the way. They leak it to the press. He didn't give it to the press. Somebody leaked it to the press. Now, that leak, he is not going to pursue that one and lock anybody up. The Department of Justice, his Department of Justice, is trying to actually crucify and burn in a public square whoever the reporter was and whoever the employee might have been, and, you know, at the CIA or the Defense Department that leaked this big scoop to AP, Associated Press, about the potential bombing plot from Yemen, which was foiled. And AP did not do anything particularly wrong, but they got information from a secret source. And often that's what journalists do to keep the government honest, like Daniel Ellsberg, right? Took classified documents and published them in the New York Times all about the war in Vietnam. The Times also was threatened with jail and lawsuits for reporters who exposed a couple of years ago that the National Security Agency was spying on millions of Americans. All these stories sometimes are obtained by leaks and by secret communications from informants or whatever, you know. And technically, they're against the law. They're very much felonies against federal law. You know, you're betraying your country. You're violating the Secrets Act and the Top Secret Act and the Classified Secret Act. And you better not say one word or we'll fire you act, whatever it is. So now the AP is under scrutiny. And I think they actually did find somebody to charge. You know, I was reading the story the other day, but something distracted me. But so here they are. Obama is and his administration are on more witch hunts and are going after more people who are working for the government who have leaked important information that is essential to preserve our democracy. They are, in other words, undercutting our democracy. They are doing things which are illegal internationally, nationally. They violate everything in the Constitution. But the real crime is that somebody leaked it to a journalist. Not that they're illegally killing people all over the world. Not that they're illegally spying on American citizens in the millions, spending billions of dollars to spy on all of us. Not that when somebody gets out on the street at an Occupy movement, the FBI and Homeland Security have planted spies in their organizations, are listening in on their phones, and are filming them illegally, following them around as if they were terrorists. All of this is no big deal to the government, that they're violating the basic principles and essentials of American life. What's a big crime to them is that somebody told on them. That's the crime. You only get this, really, when you're way on your way, when you're walking right down the road to a dictatorship. Democracies shouldn't be doing this. We are not at war with the Nazis. We are not having war. This is not World War II. You know, they are reacting to the simplest leaks or any leak at all, which put no one often in jeopardy whatsoever. What it does is exposes the fact that the government is committing astounding crimes against America and against Americans. This is what bothers them, that they're being exposed for the criminals that they are. So, you know, Obama is pursuing this and pursuing that. Meanwhile, so after all these lies, he was going to close Guantanamo. What was it, 20 years ago he was going to close Guantanamo? He was going to make sure that the drone strikes were ethical. Blah, 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 blah. He never stopped murdering people. He never closed Guantanamo. I'm telling you right now, I spoke to a guy the other day who is a current judge advocate general colonel. He's a lieutenant colonel in the judge advocate general's office. That is the military lawyers division of the Defense Department. He represented already two detainees down in Guantanamo. One was let go. The other one wasn't. Both of them. And this guy is a very straightforward guy, right? And both of them, his name is David Fracht, Frakt. You could look him up online. Just put his name in, David Frakt, Frakt, and Guantanamo, and you'll see. He's a serving lieutenant colonel as a judge advocate general, right? And he, I was on my show on Sirius the other day, talking about how illegal and immoral the government's behavior is. The former lead government attorney, you know, a military attorney in the judge advocate general's corps, a colonel, his name is Morris Davis, resigned, I think it was a year or 2 years ago, because of the outrageous behavior of the way the government is treating people at Guantanamo. The absolute violation of every single legal principle and right and freedom that every American or any human being should have. So this is what, you know, so he has a close Guantanamo. He still meets every Tuesday with John Brennan, his sort of murderer-in-chief. And, you know, he still approves drone strikes. So he gets up, and whether he has somebody leak, it's okay when he leaks this. He has somebody leak to the press that on Thursday, I guess that's today or tomorrow, whenever it is, when he addresses the graduates of this mysterious academy, whatever it is, he's going to say that there are going to be much closer reviews of the drone use of drones overseas. God knows what's going on in this country. Much closer, observance of what they're doing. And he's going to move it from the CIA, which is who are the ones who are really violating every constitutional right that everybody has and every human right. They're the ones who are blowing people up all over the place. It's not really as much the Defense Department. It's almost entirely the CIA with these drone strikes. He's going to move it from these spooks with no consciences, he's going to move it to a better place. He's going to move it to the Defense Department, right? And they can go blow people up. But anyhow, that's supposed to be an improvement. Second thing is that he's going to move ahead with closing Guantanamo. Right now, according to the man I spoke to the other day, who knows better than almost anybody because he's been down there and represented people there and got somebody off, somebody who is entirely guiltless, and even they admitted it, but they were still keeping him locked up. There are people down there who have committed suicide who are even now as we speak being force-fed so they don't die. They're in despair. These people have been locked up for, what is it now, something like 11, 12 years. Many of them, the Defense Department acknowledges, have committed no crime. They can find no guilt to these people. A lot of these people were turned in for money. When we went into Afghanistan, we offered a $5,000 reward for anybody who would turn in somebody who was a terrorist, right? $5,000 is like $50,000 or $100,000 to somebody in Afghanistan. So all of a sudden, people are turning in people to the U.S. forces as terrorists. A lot of these people got locked up, were tortured by the CIA, and some of them found their way to Guantanamo. These people have done nothing wrong. The people that they picked up on a battlefield who maybe were running away from a house that later they found weapons in, they grabbed them and put them in Guantanamo for 11 years. Their families never speak to them. They don't know where their families are. Their families don't know where they are. They know where they are, but they can't ever communicate. 12 years. They pick up teenagers. They pick up people who were in 2002, let's say. They pick up somebody who's 15 years old. This person is now 26 years old. Hasn't seen his mother, his father, his sisters, his brothers, hasn't seen his friends, is living in a barbed wire cage guarded by Marines who off and on take it into their heads to spit at them, to curse at them, and occasionally torture them. They're going out of their mind. Some of them are, the mental illness down there is like out of control. There are people there who have become seriously psychotic. There are people who have killed themselves or tried to kill themselves. Why wouldn't they? And now, even if some of those people in Guantanamo are guilty of crimes against the United States, there's no way to prove it because they never get to a federal court. Anyhow, this is what the guy tells me the other night. Out of something, I don't remember what the numbers are. They keep shifting, it seems to me. But out of something like 280 remaining prisoners, something like 150 of them are entirely innocent, and the Defense Department and the government itself and the Justice Department, whoever's involved, say they are innocent. They have no reason to hold them. The President of the United States, through the Justice Department, can walk over to a federal court in Washington, D.C. This is the court that controls these things right now, to the extent that it controls anything, that it's out of the military's hands, and say, make an application for a waiver in the particular case of whoever it is, Ahmed somebody or Salam somebody, 150 people down there have been declared innocent of any criminality, of any terrorism charges. And this has been going on for years. They've been cleared for years. And the president of the United States, Obama, this son of a bitch, will not call up Eric Holder and tell him, walk over, send somebody over to the federal court. I think it's the first district, the federal court in Washington, D.C., and make the necessary application for letting this guy go. He won't do it. He doesn't do it. He doesn't do it. And so, but he does pick up the phone and call head of his Justice Department and say, they just exposed us. They just printed a story which said this, or just printed a story that said that. I want these people locked up. You know, they're destroying the United States. They're criminals. Justice has turned totally upside down. And, you know, this is the way it is. So here's what happens. Today, you know, the president's going to give this speech. It's leaked. The New York Times writes, Obama to say in speech, or I think it was even worse than that, Obama to scrutinize drone program more closely and to move forward to close Guantanamo. Really? Really, it should say this. To be real. I mean, this is just fairyland stuff. Why they print this stuff is a mystery to me. At this point, any intelligent person, especially a reporter, should write, this is what you should write. Obama claims that he's going to move ahead with the closing of Guantanamo. Obama alleges or says he will. In other words, you say Obama says or so-and-so alleges. When there's a criminal case, any lawyer has to say that a crime is alleged because nobody is guilty until they're proven guilty. When I worked in the welfare department, now this is not exactly the same thing. You know, way back in the day, I was a welfare worker in New York City, you know, down in the Lower East Side and various other really godforsaken wildernesses of New York City where people were poor and miserable. And I did this for a long time. Walked up and down 5,000 sets of stairs to get to the top floor where it seems like everybody who was on welfare lived. And seen things it's hard to describe briefly. But when we wrote reports about whatever the welfare client told us, you know, we'd ask them, did you pay the rent? Did you pay the electric bill? What's happening with the kids? Are they going to school? You know, we'd ask them these standard questions, right? And when we wrote a report, and this is, I remember this from the probation department where I used to work. I remember this when I was a paralegal. You say, client states, because you don't know if it's true or not. You don't know if it's true. Why doesn't the New York Times and any other major media outlet say, President Obama claims he's going to do this. President Obama suggests he's going to do that. Or he tells us that he might do this. Don't say he's going to do it. Because he never does anything he says he's going to do. And plenty he does that he never said he was going to do. So, anyhow, get that off my chest, right? So, here's an article. And you've been following, I think most of you have been following this astounding story about Apple. How they have hidden $44 billion in cash, pure profit cash, offshore in places and not paying U.S. taxes on it. Not paying U.S. taxes on it. Here's an article today from the paper. Among the many things, Tim Cook is the head, the CEO of Apple, and they got called in front of a congressional committee the other day. You're aware of that, right? The Senate Finance Committee. They were supposed to grill them because the New York Times did an in-depth investigation of Apple about a year ago and revealed that they are the biggest tax dodgers in the history of the world, that they have been cheating the people of the United States, and I actually say the U.S. government, but the people of the United States out of tens of billions of dollars of tax money over a period of several years, that they hide the money overseas and set up fake corporations that have no employees in places like Ireland and other places where governments freely allow corporations to dodge taxes and, it's good for them. So they got called in front of the committee, and if it was possible for the members of this committee, Senate Finance Committee, and members of Congress, investigators from Congress, I don't know if it was from the House or from the Senate, Senate investigators who followed up this story from the New York Times found out that it's all true. that basically Apple, over the last year alone, Apple did not pay almost nearly $10 billion. I'll say it again, $10 billion in taxes it evaded last year. However, according to the way the tax codes are set up by tax lawyers and people who work for corporations who write the laws, nothing they did at this point was illegal. It's completely immoral, but it's not illegal because they and lobbyists for corporations and tax lawyers own the government and write the laws. So it's not illegal. Of course, it's illegal in the sense of pure morality. Right? In paying your fair share. So they got called in front of the Senate Finance Committee. And the Senate Finance Committee didn't do the one thing that they probably really wanted to do. The examination of these people was a big joke. They have the evidence in front of them that this guy, Tim Cook, and he brought two other, you know, big shots from Apple with him. The evidence is in front of them. They could actually, if it was illegal, which it should be, they could put those guys in jail. Right, they could actually get the U.S. Marshals to walk in and put cuffs on these guys right then and there for egregious tax evasion, worse than any in the history of the United States. What they did was they practically kissed their asses on TV. Carl Levin, John McCain, the usual suspects, you know, although Levin is not as bad, obviously. If they could have, without the television cameras, got down on their knees and walked on their knees over to Tim Cook and kissed his nude ass, they would have done it. These are our representatives. So here's Tim Cook, the head of Apple, who orchestrated this along with the late Mr. Jobs. Is that how you say his name? Jobs. And they have been deliberately doing this for many, many, many years, not paying income tax, probably not paying corporate taxes. It probably adds up to something like $50 or $60 billion, almost the entire amount of what this sequester thing is that's causing people to actually have no food and no medical care and laying people off all over the place, laying off air traffic controllers, freezing salaries, canceling meals for older people, that kind of thing. The amount of money that Apple has evaded paying to the United States government, that is to say the people of the United States, is roughly equal to the amount of the sequester, which is causing astounding misery all over the country. And when they get them in front of them with all the evidence right in front of them, they practically kiss them on the lips and kiss their ass as well. These are our representatives. This is who we vote for. This is who we choose when we go to vote, right? So here's an article from today. Among the many things Tim Cook, that's the head of, you know, Apple, apparently learned at the knee of Steve Jobs during his long tenure as Apple's number two, he's number one now, was how to create, listen to this now, this is important, how to create a reality distortion field. A reality distortion field. Or so it would appear after watching Cook, now Apple's chief executive, testify on Tuesday at a Senate hearing on the company's tax avoidance schemes. He's calling it tax avoidance because the law is tax evasion. If you break the law, you're guilty of tax evasion. You can go to jail, although rich people rarely do and corporations hardly ever do. But if you evade enough taxes, they'll put you in jail, right? But if you call it tax avoidance, it's not against the law. It's cognitive dissonance. We'll get to that in a little bit. Reality distortion field. Remember that. We are living in a reality distortion. This whole country and all of us right now are living in a massive reality distortion field, only we don't know it. It's kind of like being in the Matrix, right? So we're in a reality distortion field here. Jobs was so persuasive that he could claim the sun was setting when it was actually rising, and everyone would nod in agreement. On Tuesday, despite the overwhelming evidence presented by the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations that Apple engaged in dubious tax avoidance gimmicks, Cook claimed that Apple never resorted to tax gimmickry, even though the company appears to pay about 10% of its pre-tax income in taxes when the federal corporate tax rate is 35%. Cook said, "We pay all the taxes we owe, every single dollar." Check your reality distortion field meter. He added that Apple had never shifted any of its blah, blah, blah. He even said that the low taxes Apple pays overseas is on the profits of its overseas sales. Not to put too fine a point on it, says this columnist, but that is a flat-out lie. In other words, Cook spent Tuesday claiming that the sun was setting when it was actually rising. And What else is he saying here that I outlined? Oh, yes. Here's another whopper from Mr. Cook on Tuesday. He said that his company not only doesn't violate the letter of the law, that it doesn't even violate the spirit. He may be right on the first part, but he is wrong on the second. As the subcommittee's chairman, Carl Levin, the Michigan Democrat, pointed out to me on Wednesday, that's the reporter, one of the main goals of American corporate tax policy is to tax profits in the jurisdiction where they are produced. That intellectual property and patents are the crown jewels of the company, Senator Levin said. The Irish subsidiary that they set up had nothing to do with creating these crown jewels. It has no employees. It has no offices. Yet most of Apple's profits are now offshore because they are able to utilize a shift of their intellectual property to a tax haven. And the reporter says, question for the government of Ireland. Do you really want your country to be known as an offshore tax haven? Indeed, at a time when your citizens are dealing with the pain of an austerity program, how can you justify allowing Apple to pay virtually no taxes on a subsidiary established solely to avoid taxes in the United States? In other words, this company, and we all like their products. I have an iPod, which I love using. People have iPhones, which they love using. People have iPads, which they love using, right? This company not only has stashed billions of dollars in cash in Ireland and not paid U.S. taxes on it, corporate taxes, they don't even pay any goddamn tax to Ireland either. I don't know what anybody gets out of it except for Apple. All right, now let me. So here's Cook telling you, the head of Apple, that they pay every cent in taxes. That's insane, right? But the Senate committee, your representatives, my representatives, they said, oh, thank you very much for coming. Here's the definition of cognitive dissonance. And there's various ways to define cognitive dissonance. It is the distressing mental state that people feel when they find themselves doing things or witnessing things that don't fit with what they know or having opinions that do not fit with other opinions they hold. But one of the interpretations of one of the definitions of cognitive dissonance is, there's the reality and the facts which are staring you in the face, which are absolutely clear. For instance, Apple doesn't pay its corporate taxes. And then there is the insistence by somebody like the head of Apple that he pays every cent in taxes. The human brain cannot process this. The human brain has a lot of difficulty. In fact, it's almost impossible for an average human brain. And I presume most of you listening have one of those. I even have one sometimes. I put it on in the morning when I come down here. Today it was obviously a poor fit, but I brought it down in here. The average human brain, when it knows something that its five senses tell it is true, when it knows something that let's say you see somebody get shot down in cold blood by a cop, or beat over the head by a cop, or pepper sprayed by a cop at a demonstration, you get a picture of it on your phone. You play the picture back later, right? You see the cop doing this for no reason, no provocation, walks over to some woman who's doing nothing but standing there holding a sign saying income inequality is evil, hits her over the head with a stick. This happened in New York many times. Or sprays pepper spray in her face, or knocks her down, or slams her face into a wall and puts handcuffs on her and locks her up, right? This happened hundreds of times in New York City during the Occupy movement. And you have photographs of it. You have live streaming of it, which you could reproduce anytime you want to click a button on the internet. And then the head of the police department and the mayor announced that terrorists had assaulted police officers and had to be dealt with harshly. And your brain says, I used to be a probation officer for a long time. I worked in New York State Supreme Court with some, like, you know, murderers, child molesters, drug dealers. And I must have interviewed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds for different cases of guys who were criminals, guys who had records as long as five phone books, right? And the current crime they were convicted of, I had guys in my office, I interviewed them, I had to prepare sentence reports for the judge. What's that? A jury or a judge convicts a guy of a crime. In my case, when I was working in the Supreme Court, it was a serious crime, right? And or a jury, after deliberation, convicts a guy of a crime. And once upon a time, they used to do this. I don't know if they still do. But it was in a nod towards justice, which I approve of. They had sections of the probation department, and I was in that section for a while, where you where you prepare what's called pre-sentence reports, right? So what you do is you interview the person, either in jail or if they're out on bail, spend a lot of time behind bars actually interviewing these guys. What happens is you walk in there and you're with a guy who's had 32 assaults and 4 attempted murders, spent half his life in jail. He's about twice your size, and he's got 6 tattoos on, right, missing 3 teeth. And he's got that look on his face that a lot of people have. If you work with a lot of guys like this, you see this look. He has no soul in there. He would do anything to you in 1 second and not even know he did it or care. So they, what they do, they put you in with this guy who has recently been convicted of beating his girlfriend to death, right? And you're in the cell with him. They put you in the cell. They close the cell. They lock it. And then they walk away and say, call me when you need me. This is what I did for years, right? So I'm sitting in there. Or guys be sitting in my office on bail, right? I'm talking to these guys, drug dealers, you know, like they sell 5 kilos of heroin. And we had a guy in the mafia. I'm talking to these guys. I spent many, many years in the probation department. I interviewed several hundred people from, you know, pimps to murderers. And I'm here to tell you that not one of them ever said to me that they did the crime. When I'm sitting and interviewing them after they've been convicted, my job was to actually, after interviewing them and looking, and also I had to interview the victims of the crimes, which is a really awful job, believe me. There were rapes, you know what I mean? So I interviewed the perpetrators and the victims, right? And then I would look into the background of the various people. I would think of ways maybe not to have them locked up because the state couldn't, you know, didn't have the space to do it, right? And I'm not talking about marijuana arrests here. I'm not talking about prostitution, marijuana. You see, I got those, and I always recommended they just be given the lightest sentence or none at all. But they had to be, they were convicted of a crime. I couldn't say none at all. But I didn't, you know, I was, you know, I'm talking about murderers and serial, you know, people who beat people up, people who rob people who hurt people. And you know what? Not one single time in all that time when I interviewed these people did they ever say that they did it. And I'm telling you, I would have I had the whole file there. I would have the record of the court hearing or the trial, and you would have 5 eyewitnesses, you know, perfectly decent people say, yes, I saw Mr. Smith beat Mrs. Jones to death. I saw it from my window. I saw it on the corner. I saw it happening. I was horrified. I called the police. Whatever, right? They found the weapon, has the guy's fingerprints on it. He's got, you know, there's sound recordings. There's a Hollywood movie showing him doing it already. There are audios, 5 different audio recordings of the guy in some place saying, yeah, give me the drugs and I'll give you this package. And, you know, if I see one false move, I'll shoot you through the head. Everything, sound, video, recording, lights, camera, action, everybody watching him do it. I'm telling, not once did these guys ever say they did it. With this stuff right in front of me, I had one guy who was caught with a couple of other guys in front of a sporting goods place, right? So caught in front, no, it's a sporting goods. It was an appliance store. Caught in front of an appliance store at 2 in the morning. The window of the appliance store is smashed in. He's standing in front of the appliance store holding a brand new television with a sticker with the price on it. And they arrest him because he's just standing. Why he's just standing there, I really don't know. The cops show up and they arrest him. And I said, so why did you do that? He says, I didn't do that. I wasn't there that night. They got photographs of him with the TV. So what I'm saying is cognitive dissonance is when you know that from facts, from witnesses, from TV, from reporters covering it, from government reports released that show the truth of it, you know that something awful is being perpetrated in the world, either by the government or a corporation. You see them polluting the earth. You see them you know, blowing people up with drones. You see them doing these things over and over and over again. You have perfectly reputable reporters risking their own lives. You know, sometimes leaks are involved reporting on this stuff. We know they do these awful things. They tell us they're not doing them. And then if it's impossible to say they're not doing it, they say that it's for our own good or they know things we don't know and it's okay for them to do that. Right? This is called cognitive dissonance. cognitive dissonance. When something is real or it's a fact and you know it, you know what the government does, you know what corporations do. Apple doesn't pay any taxes. They have not paid taxes for God knows how long, practically any taxes at all to the government. And when they do, they pay about 10% of what they should pay. And they hide all this cash overseas. And the New York Times proves it. The Senate Investigation Subcommittee investigators prove it. He shows up, says it's not true. Now, the human brain cannot tolerate that. And this is part of the problem, I think, when you do all these news shows like I do and all these political shows and you interview people. And I think you all have the same problem, too. You read these things. You know it's true, right? But they tell you it's not true. And they tell you that, you know, that shit is candy. And you're supposed to swallow it and jump up and down and say, I love this. This is what goes on, right? The human brain cannot handle this. It has to figure out some way of resolving things, just like in music. It's very, very difficult for the human brain to handle dissonance. Speaking of cognitive dissonance, dissonance is very hard to listen to. The human brain likes to have the end of a musical phrase, or certainly the end of a musical piece, resolve itself in some harmonious or melodic way. It makes you feel uncomfortable or irritated or angry or odd or sad. If it, not even sad, but it makes you feel irritated or odd or unsettled if it ends in a dissonant way. It's not sonorous if it's dissonant. And the reason for that is, neuroscientists, but you sort of want it to come out that way. Now, of course, a lot of composers, jazz players, composers, especially in the modern age, deliberately add dissonance to the end of things or in the middle of things because they want to make a point about the modern world or whatever. But that's cognitive dissonance, right? And we are exposed to that by corporations and by the government so often all the time now that our brains are so scrambled that we hardly even know how to respond to it. But one way to respond to it is to know that they're almost always lying, that they're almost always cheating, and that they really don't have our interests at heart. And if we don't watch out, they will eat us. Just always know that. And then proceed accordingly to protect yourself or to protect the country. That's something that you can do. This is a follow-up from, I think, I don't know where this is, Politico or some other place. Apple dodges enough taxes to cover much of the sequester. Apple Store, New York, Fifth Avenue, blah, blah, blah. The scheme that Apple cooked up this week to finance a $55 billion stock buyback for its shareholders was orchestrated to avoid paying $9.2 billion in taxes. This is some other tricky scheme they came up with recently. The $9.2 billion tax bill that Apple dodged would have been enough to make unnecessary all of the major budget cuts we've seen occurring in the last couple of months as part of the sequester. With $9.2 billion, the amount Apple did not pay in taxes, right, just recently, the federal government could have paid for rescinding the furloughs of air traffic controllers, restored Head Start funding to avoid having to kick out an estimated 70,000 people out of the program this year, kept Meals on Wheels funding for seniors intact, restored National Institutes of Health funding so research on cancer treatments and other diseases could continue uninterrupted, rescinded cuts of up to 10% in unemployment checks to people who have been looking for work for more than 6 months without success, kept paying for public housing and assistance and housing vouchers for people who might otherwise be homeless or in substandard living conditions, rescinded cuts in programs for children with special needs and learning disabilities, and the list goes on and on and on. This is what these criminals at Apple are responsible for. If they paid their fair goddamn share, these things wouldn't have to happen. But what does the government do, and what is the corporations urge the government to do, including Democrats and including this asshole president? Let's alter Social Security. Raise the age for retirement so that you have to be even older and more beat up and still have to go to work and don't even get to retire and enjoy life at the end of your life, right? Reduce the benefits in Medicare and Social Security. That's what they want to do. But they will let Apple, the crime of this enrages me sometimes, they will let Apple get away with tax evasion of tens of billions of dollars over a period of several years, which could pay for all of these things. And all they do is say, thank you very much for coming before the committee today. Nobody winds up in jail, and they never get the money. But what they will do is take money away from people who don't have, million-dollar lawyers and lobbyists in their pocket like loose change to spread all over the place in Congress and to the president. This is America today. And speaking of cognitive dissonance, check this out. I don't know if you've seen this ad. Maybe it was on TV. But almost every day in the New York Times, here's a half-page color ad from the New York Times the other day. And it's almost there. It's there almost every other day, right, an ad like this. An ad like this, I don't know, probably costs $100,000 easy because of what the New York Times is and the subscription rate, the level, the number of people who read it. This is a color ad in the New York Times. It says here, there's a picture, a very touching, moving picture of a young black, clearly probably African mother holding a very sweet little three-year-old boy or a two-year-old boy to her, to her chest. And she's cradling his head in her arms, and she's looking out at you in an appealing manner. So it's a mother and a child. Probably very much intended to be Africans, right? And it says here, this is what the copy is. Oil companies should support the communities they're a part of. And underneath it says, we agree. And who agrees? This is Executive Vice President for Policy and Planning of Chevron. Of Chevron. This is who takes these ads out. Chevron, for 30 years now, has been backing successive military dictatorships in Nigeria, one of the worst military dictatorships in the entire world. These governments, and some of them have lasted for years, routinely murder thousands of their own citizens who stand in the way of anything that will get money for this military dictatorship. These military dictatorships are supported. 80% of their money comes from international oil companies, mostly from Chevron. Mostly from Chevron. And this, the Nigerian military is notorious throughout a world full of notorious killers for murdering its own citizens in the most brutal manner and locking people up and hanging people who say one word about what goes on in the country. And Chevron provides money for these people to stay in power. Let's see. This is written when Bush was still president. It's something that that Democracy Now! Did. As President Bush wraps up his five-day Africa tour, and he's arriving in Nigeria here, he is accompanied by a large entourage of corporate executives. Front and center are oil executives. Bush is set to meet with Chevron Texaco CEO and Chairman Dave O'Reilly. Other transnational corporations include ExxonMobil and Shell Petroleum. You understand, though, he's arriving in a state visit in Nigeria, and the first thing he's going to do is meet with the head of Chevron. Bush is joined by his national security advisor, Condoleezza Rice. Rice is a former board chairman of Chevron. Get that? The company named an oil tanker after her, the Condoleezza Rice. By the way, there is also, I think, an aircraft carrier or a battleship. Do they have this anymore? A cruiser named after Condoleezza Rice, so that fits perfectly. Nigeria is Africa's largest oil producer, cranking out more than 2 million barrels a day. Nearly 750,000 barrels of Nigeria's oil go to the United States every day. That is 8% of total U.S. crude oil imports. Nigeria, Africa's most populous country, a nation that has lived more than 30 years under a succession of military dictatorships infamous for their corruption and ruthlessness. Oil is the lifeblood of the Nigerian military regime, supplying the military with nearly 80% of its revenue, pumping more than $10 billion a year into the government, enriching corrupt generals and their cronies. For nearly 40 years, oil giants like Shell, Mobil, and Chevron have worked in joint ventures with Nigeria's dictatorships to exploit the country's vast petroleum resources, often against the wishes of local communities throughout the country. And I'm skipping ahead here. Chevron has caused the drilling there, and the oil pollution is overwhelming. Chevron's drilling has caused the salt water of the Atlantic Ocean to invade the fresh water of various communities. In one town, villagers also complained that canals, which the oil company contends facilitate local commerce, have led to severe erosion, causing whole communities to have to get up and leave their homes, move away. Dead pigs are all over the place. Villagers say that pigs and other animals have been dying in droves after recent Chevron oil spills. Let's see. Water is polluted, so they can't even use the water to drink. Two protesters at an oil site were shot to death by the Nigerian military. Now, Chevron officials were interviewed by various journalists about this, and they admitted, because what do they care, you know, that they hired the Nigerian military. So, in other words, Chevron is polluting, you know, hundreds and hundreds of miles of coastland. They're polluting inland waters. Whole villages are polluted. All the animals are dying. People have no water to drink. People are dying of poverty. And so they are protesting all this drilling that's going on there. And Chevron hires the Nigerian military to go into these villages and silence these people. In some cases, shoot them to death. They pay. They don't even just like give the government the money and say, please take care of this. They actually hire the military to go in, and the worst parts of the military, to go into these villages, arrest people, beat people up, evacuate people. That is to just physically drag them out of the villages near the drilling sites, and lock them up, hang them, or just plain shoot them. And what am I seeing here? I open the paper. I see this very touching, sweet-looking African mother with her child. And it says here, oil companies should support the communities they're a part of. We agree. The Chevron Corporation. Cognitive dissonance. We are exposed to this kind of insanity every day. And it takes all our energy, as you know, right? It takes all your energy. And you can't live on rage your whole life. And the best thing to do is to be an activist about it. You know, to civil disobedience. I don't know what else there is to do. I mean, I often on this show lately, because of the frustration I think we all feel, I have mentioned revolution on this show. I have mentioned revolution because when I look at the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, especially the Declaration of Independence, and I look at the founders of the country, I see that they, the people who invented and created and founded this country, founded it on the principle of a revolution, of overthrowing a government that could act in such a manner, that could be a military dictatorship, that gave us no rights, that stole everything that belonged to us, that stepped on our heads and took away everything. There was no freedom of speech. In the American Revolution, one of the objections was that the British would take troops and land them here to quell riots, they called them, but they were basically people protesting the way that they had no freedom of speech and everything else. They would take the troops and they'd just post them in people's houses. They'd say, shut up, this guy's going to sleep here. Sergeant so-and-so deploys three guys to sleep on your living room floor. You shut your mouth or we'll stick a bayonet in you or we'll lock you up as a traitor. You say one word, you're a traitor because you're a colonial possession. So I talk about revolution because it says in the Declaration of Independence, which is our founding document, that we have the right to revolt against a government when it no longer protects our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. I don't know what happens to the poor people in Nigeria, but that's the way it goes. Cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance. Obama doesn't close Guantanamo when he says he is. He leaves people rotting there who are trying to kill themselves out of pure despair when he could just pick up the phone and have them released. He leaves them there. Now says he's going to close Guantanamo. Right? Then he says he's going to keep a very good eye on the drone program, which he has said before. And he's saying that he's going to make it more legal and more constitutional, whatever he's saying. And you know he's not going to do it. He's going to keep murdering people. He's just not going to tell you about it. Cognitive dissonance. This is what goes on. I'll give you one more example of this is what you have to deal with. Henry Kissinger is to be honored at the Intrepid Sea and Space Museum in New York City during Fleet Week. The Intrepid Air and Space Museum will honor Dr. Henry Kissinger, 56th Secretary of State, and he will receive the Intrepid Freedom Award presented to a national or international leader who has distinguished himself in promoting and defending the values of freedom and democracy, the core beliefs of our nation. Yes, you are hearing me right. They're going to honor one of the worst mass murderers the United States has ever produced. And they're going to honor him at a special dinner at the end of this month. I think it's this coming weekend. Kissinger was partially or almost completely responsible for policies during the American war in Vietnam. And this is from a Canadian source, against Vietnam. But it's all true stuff. It's from his own biographers writing about him. He was connected to government policies which led to the war in Vietnam and continued the war in Vietnam, the Pakistani massacre of Bengalis in 1971, in which an estimated 1.5 million people were killed. Kissinger was connected to the operations of the Shah of Iran's secret police. He was connected to the brutal Pinochet years in Chile. He advised supporting Pinochet, in which thousands of people were disappeared, locked up, murdered, tortured. Kissinger was personally responsible for advising and policing the policy of the U.S. bombing of Cambodia that killed something like 50 or 60,000 people, probably men, women, and children. They have no idea who they were bombing. They said they thought they were. They said they were bombing supply lines for the North Vietnamese army. They just from 20,000 feet, they dropped millions of tons of bombs on forests there and killed who knows how many people. Kissinger was also connected to the 1974 Turkish invasion of Cyprus, in which there are an estimated 150,000 refugees. He also was involved in an Indonesian slaughter of some 100,000 East Timorese who attempted to rebel against Indonesia. Let's see. So this is Kissinger, right? Kissinger is one of the greatest mass murderers in history. And in American history, he represents everything that is wrong with America. He's being honored by this place for his contributions to humanity and democracy. I went to the website. The New York City's Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum, this is from their website, it's a dynamic, interactive, and educational journey for all ages. The museum's mission is to honor our heroes, educate the public, and inspire our youth. They're going to give this guy a Freedom Award and a Democracy Award. Their job, they say, is to inspire our youth. Here's something else from them. Every American who has served our country is part of its history and a guardian of its freedom. We gratefully thank them for defending our treasured American way of life. Mass murder? Bombings? Overthrowing the democratically elected president of a country in South America, personally ordering the CIA to murder Salvador Allende, right? When he was democratically elected down there, and assassinating him because he was going to socialize and nationalize industries, some of which belong to American corporations. Let me just give you a final little shot of unreality. This is the Intrepid Air, Sea, and Space Museum. Part of the rules and regulations when you go on board there on this museum is it says no vandalism. It's illegal to commit vandalism. Also, it says no fighting, provoking a fight, or engaging in disorderly or boisterous conduct on the U.S. Intrepid is allowed. They're going to honor Henry Kissinger, who is responsible for the misery and the murder and the deaths and the poverty of millions of people, who was wanted on German, I think, and Spanish, I think it is, state warrants for murder. And it's not even he can't even travel there because he'll be arrested. They're going to honor him in this place to encourage youth, to inspire youth, and promote freedom and democracy. Think of it. It's called cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance. We are in a distorted reality field. It is our responsibility to keep our sanity and to keep them honest, because they will put this stuff on you. They will roll it on you. They will drop it on you. They will blare it in your face and in your ears. Apple says that they're perfectly legal and they pay all their taxes. They never did. Kissinger murdered everybody. He's being honored for his contributions to democracy. Chevron murders people, hires dictators to lock people up and kill people, but they're saying that they're bringing an energy to a needy world, and they really want everybody in Africa to be happy. Cognitive dissonance. Stay true. Stay honest. Don't listen to their bullshit. Thank you.